Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground, right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. Please visit us on all of our affiliates. Blog Talk Radio is where we broadcast from. iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Player FM. There are more that I have not memorized yet, if you believe that. It's wonderful to be here and broadcasting live from here. Every week on Haunted Playground, I gather the folks that I believe to be the brightest and most beautiful minds and hearts and souls in both the paranormal and spiritual communities. And we talk about everything from, is there life after death, to do you believe there's a griffin in your backyard? It belongs right here. Or a Loch Ness monster in your swimming pool? It belongs right here on Haunted Playground. My guest today is a wonderfully talented psychic medium. She's a fantastic paranormal investigator. She is the founder and big cheese over at the Paranormal Research and Resource Society. And she's a very dear friend of mine, and it's wonderful to have her here again on Haunted Playground. This is like her bazillionth experience here on Haunted Playground. And I'm so happy to have her with us. She's a great friend, super talented person, and she'll be calling in at any minute. Welcome the wonderful Jenny Stewart to the show. How are you, my friend? It's wonderful to hear your voice.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. It's great to hear what's new in your world, and how are you surviving this strange time of COVID?
I've had it twice, but I'm surviving. I have a cold now, but it's not COVID. It's just a cold.
Okay. Are you sure?
I'm sure. No, I'm 100% positive. Oh. I got tested, so I'm positive.
I think it's all COVID right now. I think everything is happening to us because I had it too. And it beat the hell out of my immune system. So when I get sick now, I still blame COVID, although I haven't been that sick, thankfully. But I think we're all sort of dealing with compromised physiological immune systems right now. And that means we have to watch our emotional immune system and our spiritual immune system as well, right?
Oh,
so
I agree.
Be extra vigilant in protecting yourself against negative energy and negative spirits, because we're all in sort of a compromised place right now.
Yeah, we keep having these weird shifts, and every time we have a shift, it's like, oh no, you know, because it causes so much chaos and havoc in people's lives, and you know, anytime I realize, oh, we're in the middle of a shift and this is what's going on, I try to warn people. I'm like, hey, this is what's going on. You know, just brace yourself. It'll be okay. You know, and it. I used to always sleep with cellulite in my hand, and I stopped. Well, I don't know, but I went back to doing that again because the shifts have gotten so quick. I mean, they're rapid and they are intense. So it's causing a lot of chaos.
Yeah, I agree, and it's scary. It's a scary time. I mean, it's And many of us are walking around still compromised from having COVID. I think a lot of people are emotionally compromised because they're terrified of the quarantine. They're fearful that the disease will come and kill them. They're staying home eating Cheetos and watching the news. Nobody's, like, they're not out doing things that are healthy. People are staying indoors in their homes. They're not exercising as much. That I'm eating right. I mean, I gained a lot of weight from COVID. I can only say that now because I have taken all but 15 pounds of it off. But it was just having no place to go and nothing to do and just delicious food to eat. You know?
I think a lot of people.
Well, I think from fear comes a lot of different reactions, and I think some people react differently in the way that it becomes aggressive. You know, they almost feel like they're being picked on, so to speak, and so they kind of lash out at other people. And I've had to learn to realize that because it seems like, you know, even like people drive, people, it's alcohol. My God, people lost their common sense. Are people just not paying attention, you know? And it, honestly, it's people are just walking around in a fog right now.
Yeah. And you've never done well with that, huh? You and I were fire signs, right? We're fighters. I've had to make a conscious effort in my life not to be a fighter. Natural go-to is I'll cut a bitch, and in the most namaste, spiritually pleasant way. But I don't like narcissists. I don't like people who, as my mama used to say, take their half out of the middle. I don't like aggressive people, people who bully and humiliate on purpose. And the world is full of those. And it's a conscious effort not to go after everyone that you see. To kind of pick your battles, so to speak. Instead, I teach classes and teach workshops and help people learn how to not take it all, how to take it all in stride. But I know that's something you've wrestled with too, is sort of not being the Lorax of calling out douchey people all the time.
Yeah, I mean, because I have a tendency, that's something that I've been known for, is to call them out.
Calling out the douchey? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Over the years. You know, and I think as I got older, the more milder I became with that stuff. I don't even get on Facebook hardly. I just don't have the patience for it anymore. And, you know, I devote most of my time now to my home life and helping people, you know, behind the scenes and, you know, my grandkids. And, you know, just, you know, I've been really busy with them, especially with COVID. You know, they haven't been having school regularly. They've been out of school a lot. So I've been, you know, taking care of them quite a bit.
Yeah. What's your latest exciting love of the paranormal? Like, what are you loving that's happening in the community right now?
Not a lot. I wish I could say that there was something, but there really isn't. You know, there's not a lot of things happening. John Zappas and I, we were supposed to do a tour this year. We had planned it. You know, we were going back and visiting a lot of the locations that we had, you know, done previously together. And, you know, we put that on the back burner because of COVID, you know, because we don't want to be responsible for making people sick. So we, you know, we're just waiting to see now how things pan out. And hopefully, you know, either later in the year or next year, we'll be able to finally, you know, get back out and do the work and, you know, get that done. But, you know, really, it, you know, I've been upset with the paranormal as a whole for a while now. So it's, you know, can't say there's anything good coming out of it.
Really, you're not feeling the love in any way?
No, I've been really upset with it for a while, you know, with how things have done. And, you know, I think, you know, I'm really proud of some of the work that some of my fellow colleagues are doing, even some of the people on TV, you know, some of the things that have come out it's just become more, the more commercialized it becomes, the less the people lose sight of what it's really the work supposed to be about. Because now it's not about finding answers and explaining or trying to, you know, scientifically explain what happens to us when we die. It's to get on TV.
And
that's what it
becomes. Right, and that's the problem, right? Everyone wants to, and I've even seen that, and this is sad to say, but I've seen it in the culinary world with my chef friends. That once chefs became celebrities, it didn't just become about where can I get that really great gig as a head chef or where can I open my own restaurant. It becomes about what can I do to attract attention to have my own show on Food Network. And I just think that's the nature of people, right? Everybody wants to be famous. and chefs and psychics, right, and ghost hunters, that's the new fame mm-hmm. of reality. So it's it's interesting, you know?
Well, and it starts taking credibility away from the field, you know, the genre. Even cooking shows, you know, it starts taking the credibility away. And I love cooking shows. Oh, that's my second passion is cooking. I love to cook. And, you know, I see some of these chefs on there, I'm like, yeah, you've lost my respect, you know, because I'm seeing some of the things they've done, you know, I'm like, yeah, why are you doing that, you know? But it is, and it's become some of the goofy. The goofier it is, the worse it is.
Mm-hmm. Right, and all the competition and knocking everyone down. Like, I don't know why I watch it. It's a guilty pleasure, but Kids Baking Championship. I watch it because I'm amazed to see what these wonderful children can make. It fascinates me because I'm a cook too.
Right.
But then it makes me sad because they cut them down and they're mean to them and they have to go home and they're going to cry sometimes. They have meltdowns because the time is running out. That makes me sad. You know?
But I think Jeff and Valerie handle it really well. And I think they're a lot nicer than some of those other ones could be, you know?
Oh, I agree.
Because Jeff is genuinely a sweet person. He is a very, very lighthearted, very giving, kind person, Jeff is.
No, I think they do a great job. It's just the whole nature of what it has to be a reality show makes
right.
me sad. You know, like I have a hard time with people who can't win.
Right, exactly. And they
but
can't
that's
all
kind
win.
Of life, right? So,
mm-hmm.
No. So what would you like to see from the paranormal community? I mean, if we could make changes during COVID, what would you like those changes to look like?
A more, you know, open communication. You know, we believe it or not, back when there wasn't TV shows, and we really had to be almost secretive. You know, it was almost like we couldn't go around talking about, we couldn't get on radio shows. There wasn't radio shows that we could get on and talk about, oh, yeah, I'm part of the paranormal field, because people thought you were crazy. We just didn't talk openly about it. You found other groups in your area or somebody that you could connect with, and you would share your information about your ideas off of them. And it wasn't a competition. It wasn't a threat. It wasn't a threat to say, hey, look, this is what I'm working on, and let me show you this, see what you think, and not worry, okay, they're going to go behind my back and do this. You know, I would like to see it go back to what it was before, and I don't think it'll ever be the way it was before television. You know, television helped the paranormal field in a lot of ways, don't get me wrong, but it also hurt it in many other ways. And, you know, I would just like to see, you know, it, you know, be different. And I think people that watch TV shows have to realize that that's not paranormal investigating. That is not how you research the paranormal. That what you see in an hour isn't, you know, that's not how you do it. There's a lot more that goes into it. And, you know, I just would like to see less shows and more, you know, working together, more networking. And I think TV shows are starting to die out anyway. I said that for a couple of years now, but I really think that the TV shows are starting to dry up.
Yeah, but they say
you
that.
You can only investigate a house.
And there's like,
huh?
I know, but you go to Discovery Plus. I just got Discovery Plus, and there's like 50 of them. There's so many of them. There's
right.
more than ever now.
Well,
I know we keep saying they're going to die down.
Well, and a lot of those, believe it or not, a lot of those are old shows that they put on there, you know, from back, you know, early 2000s, mid-2000s. But they're also, the head of Travel Channel, I think he will put anybody on television that comes to him. I hate to say that, Matt Butler. I hate to say it, but it's true. I just think that you can only investigate or show somebody trying to investigate so many different ways, and then it becomes almost a joke. And, you know, like, there's a demon in the White House. Okay, I knocked that show. At first, I would not watch it. I kept telling everybody that's a joke. You know, this is ridiculous. But then I did watch it, and it actually, I wish they would have named it something else, because it was a really informative show. It had a lot of historical documentation in it and had a lot of, you know, facts that were backed up.
Yeah.
But it's almost like when you hear demon in the White House, first of all, that's going to really draw in the viewers. But in the same breath, it's almost making a mockery or making fun of what we do.
Right.
That's just my opinion. I mean, it's just call it something else. You know, get a little bit more serious about it.
The White House is famously haunted, right? I mean, everybody knows that.
Right. But they're trying to say there was a demon in the White House. By the title of the show. And, you know, honestly, I didn't get through the whole show, but I watched, you know, the first part of it. And they did a really good job from what I could see, other than
right.
the name. And
yeah,
I just watched
the Shock Doc on the Amityville Horror.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just recently watched the one on the true story of The Exorcist on Roland Doe. I actually thought they were both really done very well. Very informative, lots of information, lots of good commentators, and not a lot of hysteria.
Yeah,
but
there was that one. To what?
I'm sorry?
I said there was one that was done in the Warrens early on Ed Lorraine Warren, and I won't watch a lot of those. I won't watch them because, you know, first of all, I am very close to John, and, you know, that was his aunt and uncle, and when I see things that are done poorly or things that aren't true, I get very upset, you know, because I'm very protective of him. And then after, you know, having a lot of communication after Ed died with Ed, for, you know, John, I become very attached to Ed Warren from the other side, and so I'm very protective of him. And John told me, he goes, no, watch it, it's really good. And I did. I watched, there was one early on that they did, and it was done well. You know, John would point out some of the old videos. He'd say, oh, look, you can see me if you slow it down, you know. But it always worries me when stuff like that comes out, because if it's not done right, then you're going to tarnish, you know, the name of people that a lot of us consider the pioneers of the paranormal. You know, a lot of new people don't even know who they are. Until you say The Conjuring, you know, you bring up The Conjuring, you're like, oh, yeah.
People need to know who the Warrens are. It's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Hans Hauser, I mean, a lot of people didn't even know who he was until Dave Schrader, you know, did that TV show, until he did The Hauser Files. A lot of people didn't even know who he was. But it's important.
Right.
See, the shows like that, that show, I love that show, because to me, they did something that, you know, those were his files. You get to hear his recordings, things that you probably would have never got to hear before had they not done the TV show. You would have never heard those recordings. And, you know, I was glued to the set, you know, the TV show. Oh, I got to watch this. And I think Dave Schrader did a very good job. You know, they all did. And
yeah,
those shows
Dave's
are okay. I like those shows. Do
Dave's
what?
Been here, and I think he's wonderful. I said Dave has been a guest here, and I think he's wonderful.
Okay.
And Alexandra Holder is a friend of mine, and she's been here many times.
I talked to her. I knew her a long time ago. she's so crazy. She's such a sweetheart, but I haven't talked to her in years. Dave, I've known for a lot of years, and I'm glad that he finally got to actually be out there and put, you know, the show, because he's real. You know, when you saw him get shoved, he really got shoved. You could tell he got shoved.
Yeah.
He didn't fake it. And, you know, and I'm not saying that because I'm friends with these people. You know, there are people that I'm friends with that could have shows that I was like going, what in the world? Why? Why are you on television? You know, why did you sell yourself out? You know?
Right. Well, I think people need it. I mean, you've been on TV. You were on Animal Planet's The Haunted, right? So you know what it's like to be on TV.
Yeah, and that was and people said that I'm a hypocrite. You're a hypocrite. You talk about people being on TV, and then you turn around. You know, I was in the process of filming another show when all the, you know, heyday, you know, the pandemic came about. But the thing is I won't get, never, even with The Haunted, I wouldn't say anything that they tried, you know, they didn't try to get me to say
you know, anything. But if they would have, I wouldn't have done it. You know, that was one of the things that they knew up front. You know, I will do this because I think it can help educate people on what attachments are. And, you know, but I wouldn't say anything that wasn't true. I wouldn't agree to anything that, wasn't true. And because I'd made up my mind, I wasn't going to sell myself out. I didn't even want to do the show, but we ended up doing it because we thought that it would be a good way to educate people on the danger of the paranormal. Because there really is danger in paranormal in investigating. A lot of people don't even realize that.
Absolutely there is. And I think that's something that I liked about the documentary about Roland Doe, the shock jock on Discovery Channel, is you learn it's obvious what happened to this poor kid with his aunt, who fancied herself a psychic, but didn't really know what the hell she was doing, had this 12-year-old kid come over and do Ouija board with her. And, you know, the kid was in puberty. That's the primate 7 attachment. Something got attached to him and possessed him.
And
she died very suddenly. So it went after her, too. You have to be careful about what you get involved
with. And people don't realize, too, that, having to deal with, exorcisms and things like that, or even that's dangerous to a priest. I mean, it in the long term, it ultimately will take the life of a priest, you know, depending on how many they do and how much they're engrossed in it. I mean, it really, you know, will affect their life too. And I think of Andrew Calder when anytime we talk about, you know, attachments and things like that, because he did the IM6 case, and, you know, he's no longer with us. I'm not saying that that's what created, you know, that's what, you know, killed him, but that didn't help, you know. His, you know, state of well-being was weakened as a result of it, I believe.
Yeah. Who are you talking about?
Andrew Calder. Father Andrew.
Oh,
yes. Father Andy. Johnny Calder.
Yeah.
Father Andrew. I met him one time.
I think
he was just such a sweet man.
I think that's exactly true. And I think that being an exorcist is a thankless job, right? Because no one knows you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're taking on someone's attention, and even if you're not actually getting possessed, those entities are coming at you, entity or entities, right? Those demonic energies. And it wears you down after time. It's a lot. I think
what
it either battle. Wears you down or...
Well, and I talk about Hinnerington. Everybody knows, you know, I talk about Hinnerington all the time. And the project that we did with Hinnerington.
People who are just tuning in, explain Hinnerington a little bit and how you got involved with it.
Oh, Hinnerington. Hinnerington was a African-American TB hospital that was opened in 1923, and it set back in this really... Back then, it would have been considered a very secluded, very isolated area where families would have had a hard time getting there. And that's because we discovered that a lot of experimenting was going on there because they were African Americans, and they used them basically as guinea pigs to find a cure. And I, my husband, since I'm married to now, David, he lived in Maryland, and he, you know, we got together, he started hanging with this place called Hinnerington. He wasn't in the paranormal, but... He was dabbling in it because his house was haunted. And the first time I was ever on that property was insane. I mean, I was just blown away. I mean, because I had done Waverly Hills. That was my stomping ground. That was my training ground growing up. And, you know, I was like, okay, you know, I have a fascination with, you know, tuberculosis hospitals. Here's another one. It was so different from Waverly Hills, but the same heaviness hung there. More so, I think, at Hinnerington than it did at Waverly. And so we ended up deciding we were going to do an actual documentary. We brought teams in from around the country, a professional photographer, you know, filmographer, and we spent 2 weeks, you know, shooting this documentary. And, you know, time up into that, you know, anybody that came in to do it with us, you know, we would do a lot of video, you know, video interviews and things like that, depending on the documentary.
And all the people that participated in the Hinterogen Project that really went in with bad intentions, because later on they all tried to steal the documentary and kind of push me and David out. They have either had something very serious happen to their health, or they have since died. You know, everything, a lot of bad things have happened to those people. Excuse me. And Hinterogen was the thing that, you know, I kept getting attachments. I kept, you know, I ended up, our house ended up infested with a lot of spirits. I had what I called Mr. Grumpy Pants. He was, I don't know that he was demonic, but he was very, he was not very nice. He was very dark, very evil. I was scared to death on my own property. It became such a prison for me. After dark, I couldn't be in the house by myself because I was so fearful. I couldn't go outside after dark by myself because I was scared to death of the property. And I went to a conference a few years after, and I met this man, Fratimir, awesome dude. He was helping me, you know, with attachment work, and he asked me how I knew so much about attachments, and I told him that I kept getting them from Hinterogen. You know, I kept getting all these attachments. And I said, you know, it really hurt because I kept telling all the spirits there, I'm here, I'm going to help you. I'm going to help, you know, help you free you guys. And he looked at me and he goes, did you ever stop and think that you did exactly what you promised them that you would do? You helped them. You carried them out of there. I get goosebumps when I say that. I never thought of it that way. I never stopped and thought, they're attaching to me because they want to be free. I'm helping them be released. I would go home and I would meditate and they would leave. It wasn't like they would stick around. And after that, I wasn't scared anymore. I had no fear. I did not fear even Mr. Grumpy Pants. I respected
right.
the fact that he was
negative.
And
you think you got him, right? That spirit in your home with the negative energy. You think you got him
what?
From...
I
think you got
him
from Hinterogen.
No.
Okay.
I think there was a portal on our property that was open. The late Rosemary Ellen Guiley told me that there was a interdimensional portal that was open on the property. And she described it, had never been there, but yet she could describe that corner of where it was coming from, where I always knew that part of where there was something coming from. And at the time, see, when I first started for Hinterogen Project, I hadn't opened up as a medium. I didn't even know I was a medium, a psychic medium until, you know, I opened up in, 2000. And when I did, you know, it was like we were right in the throes of Hinterogen, and it was like it slapped me across the face really hard, because trying to open up in that, not knowing what you were doing, not knowing how to protect yourself, and in probably one of the largest paranormal playgrounds I'd ever been involved in, and there was definitely demonic there, it was hard. It got me good. I mean, it still affects me today, this very moment. And it got so bad the last night out there. I had invited 17 people. There were 17 investigators from various parts of the country that came in to do this documentary. And the last day that anybody went out there, somehow or another, all of the people that had sensitivities, our mediums, the people that were gifted ended up somehow not going, whether it been they didn't feel good, they got in an argument with their significant other, something kept them from getting in the car and going to Hinterogen that night. And
wow.
It was like it was set up on purpose that way. I mean, we knew, we felt when they were there. We felt when they got on the property. And because the sheriff's office didn't want a lot of cars parked there at the entrance, what they would do is there was two different cars that would go and drop everybody off, and then they would drive the cars about 5 to 10 minutes up the road and then bring one car back. So when everybody was done, everybody would have to wait while the drivers of the cars would hop in those three cars, go back, and, you know, in the one car and go back and pick up the other two cars. And the whole entire week that we were doing that documentary shooting at Hinterogen, I kept hearing
walk the path to me, walk the path with your faith. And I just kept hearing, walk the path, over and over and over. And when they first got there, when they were waiting on the drivers to get back, they were all standing in a circle with their backs, you know, turned into the circle so they could see 360. And they heard this blood curdling scream. And then this guy comes walking out of the hospital, like, no light or anything. I mean, he had a cell phone, and that was it. And they said he was really weird. Well, they read him off. And they go up, and they're you know, listening to the audio now. I have the recording. One of the guys put their HD Zoom in their pocket and left it running from the time they got there till they left. And listening to it now, looking back, you know, they would ask for, they say, can you make the meter spike and make a noise? And it would. And then they would say, oh, that's great. You did a good job. Well, you would hear an EVP who would say, we did it, go. Or danger, leave. You know, what was good at hearing was trying to warn them that they needed to go. But they couldn't hear them because all the people that were gifted were not there. All the people that had the ability to know there was something present trying to warn them was not on property. We were all at malls. And all of a sudden, it changes. As the sun went down and it got darker, I'll never forget Lisa Abney, who was one of the members of the project, said, night doesn't belong to us here. And it didn't. It was like when it got dark, the sun went down, everything changed. It felt totally different on that property.
Yeah.
And you could hear, you heard them say, it's coming, not safe, hide, go, why aren't they leaving? I mean, we're the EVPs. And finally, something ended up happening. They called and told me they're leaving. And you could hear the panic in some of the seasoned investigators' voices saying, hurry up, you know, pack it up, we got to go. And they called and told me they were leaving. And my exact words were, don't cut behind the administration building, don't cut through the grass, stay on the path. Well, they didn't. They cut, because it started raining, they cut behind it in the grass, and one of the investigators got attacked. She weighed probably a half pound soaking wet, and when they went to pick her legs up, they probably weighed 200, and they felt like they weighed like bricks. And it just, a lot of things happened. You know, the car got hit by some force. I mean, it was just a lot of things happened. I mean, I saw, like, people that had 25 years investigating experience fall through the front door wanting to go home and kiss their kids. I mean, it was scary. It was a very scary situation. And some of the stuff that happened that week, I look back on it and go, dang, there was some paranormal stuff that really happened. But that's Henryton. And when we did the show, you know, I tried to express to people that it's dangerous. You know, if you're not a seasoned investigator, don't go there. Don't go there really anyway, because it torn down now, thank God.
Even if you are
it's
a
no longer
investigator,
there.
Don't go there.
Right. Like, don't go there. No, don't anybody go there. Just don't go, period. But we try to tell people, if you're not seasoned, don't go.
That was the focus of the episode of The Haunted that you did, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yes, we wanted people to understand that it really was, it was dangerous. Those kids that were there that, you know, we ended up ultimately investigating their house, you know, they had things following them home that was really nasty. And, you know, I had to go clean their house up from where they had been in Houston and didn't know what they were doing. And, you know, we got three warnings that came through the ghost box that also came, you know, true. And it was her dad. A lot of people think that we thought it was a negative entity that was giving us the warnings. And we knew all along it was her dad that had died that was giving us the messages. But the thing, you know, what was evil and dark in their house was causing a lot of the things that were happening to happen.
Yeah, that's why you need to be very careful about locations. Not everybody should go investigate everybody. Not everybody's set up to investigate everywhere, right?
No, you're not. It's not a hobby. It's really not a hobby. And that's what people say. People are like, oh, that's my hobby. Well, no, it's not a hobby. Because you can go in and you can really get hurt, or you can bring stuff home that's going to upset your entire family. And don't take things, do not take items, souvenirs from haunted locations, period.
Oh, yeah. What
people
about
do
that? Have you had any weird...
Let's talk about that, because you're the first person that's ever talked about that on a show of mine. Let's talk about not taking haunted souvenirs.
Have you ever watched, you know, Haunted Collector? That's not
always
tell you all about that.
Yeah, but that's not always people taking souvenirs, right? That's oftentimes just people buy a house and or buy something at a swap meet.
People
or, you know what I mean?
Well, if you go to an antique shop and you buy something, you have to be careful, especially if you don't know the history of the item you're buying. A lot of time, if you buy something, I'm not saying don't go to an antique shop and buy something you like, because I've done it before. Make sure you get it cleared if you don't know how to clear it yourself, because it can have bad energy on it.
Yeah.
And there,
that's
true. Okay.
Even with a house. Everybody wants to live in a 400-year-old house, but you need to be careful living in a 400-year-old house because you don't know where that house is in, right?
Well, yeah, you don't know the history of it. You don't know, I mean, that house could, you know, have had murders or, I mean, a lot of things could transpire that could cause it. You know, I still think that the people that lived in David's house before he bought it in Maryland, I think they knew something happened because they left, you know, in a hurry. And, you know, I finally did the research on the house and found out there was suicide, that, you know, a female had committed suicide in the laundry room there, and that she was married to a very abusive man. You know, that's who Mr. Guppy Fans, I believe, was. But, you know, you have to find the history on your, you know, anyhow, it doesn't even have to be 400 years old. You know, I've investigated houses that are fairly new. The house that we did for the haunted, that house was not that old. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it's like 15, maybe 20 years tops. Is that old?
But was that that house?
I mean,
was that about that house, the episode of The Haunted? Or was that
no,
about
it was about what followed
them
home.
Right, kids went to Henrietta that followed them home, yeah.
Right, yeah. But I've investigated newer houses, and a lot of times the land that a house is built on. I tell people when you buy a house, have a house blessing done, you know, gift tobacco, you know, gift, you know, whiskey, something to the earth, you know, give something back, you know, ask for the earth's blessings, you know, the spirit, you know, their blessing for you moving in there. Because that land belonged to somebody else long before it did you.
Right, and make peace with the native energy that was there.
Yes, because you don't know if there's bloodshed there, you don't know what happened. I mean, I always tell people the best thing to do is do a house blessing and do some kind of ceremony where you're gifted back to the earth. Give something back. Tobacco is the best thing. Tobacco and whiskey.
Tobacco and what?
Whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
Whiskey's always been a good thing to put out. I don't know why. I was told by a shaman years ago to always give tobacco and whiskey, and I've always done that. And a lot of, in the houses I've lived in, you'll find planted one of those small bottles of whiskey and some tobacco.
Whiskey is great.
And
mementos, too. Whiskey is great to appease leprechauns and fairies and elementals, too.
Exactly, which I think I had one of those. But they say once you get an elemental attached to you, that it'll leave, but it'll come back. It always comes back. And I was worried.
Yeah.
I still get to the point where I worry that, you know, I had an elemental attachment because I had been told that I did. And I thought, oh, Lord, that's all I need. At one point. Because I could smell Henrietta a lot. Like, when I get rid of an attachment, I can smell Henrietta.
Oh, wow.
Henrietta had its own rot smell. It was weird. It was the smell of it. And we did the reenactment, because when you watch the haunted episode, the only time you actually see Henrietta State Hospital is our footage. It's the footage that we filmed of the hospital. All the other times when they're showing scenes of us in a hospital, that's the Sykesville is out Sykesville, psychiatric hospital is where we were at. They did all the reenactments there, and that place reminded me of Henrington.
Do you think that the exposure that you got at Henrington, sweetie, do you think that that almost sort of marked you so spirits now see you and come around you? Because I think that happens sometimes. I feel that way about the house I grew up in.
Yeah, I think that because you know, like Waverly, I went back into Waverly a couple of times, you know, with events. The first time I went back, I was so spooked. I mean, it spooked me really bad. And the emotions that I felt were so different than they were when I did it. Because, you know, I was in there when it was opened as a hospital, a geriatric hospital. I was inside Waverly. And, you know, it just, the feeling was different. And I think it's because, I don't know if it's because I was made at one point to feel what they felt when they were there at Henrington, and so I related to that at Waverly, or if it was because, you know, the energy that was around me at Waverly at that point. But, yeah, no, I think there's people that, they're my husband, for example. He's been a guest on somebody's show before, and he flat out told him, don't ask me to talk about the eighth place because I won't do it. I will not talk about it. I won't say the name. I won't even talk about it. And David refuses to. He will not talk about it. Me, on the other hand, I've never stopped talking about it. In fact, you know, I wrote a book, Rosemary Freddy. We revised it. Rosemary was helping me with it. And I promised her a month before she passed away that I would finish the book. And I'm going to finish the book the way she wanted it. And it's because they sacrificed. Think about that. Those patients at Henrington became sacrifices without even knowing it. They sacrificed their life for a cure. And that's what's so sad.
Yeah. Right? But that happens.
And there's no history. And when you try to Google it, you try to find history about it, there's hardly anything. I mean, they finally erected a historical marker at the site. And that's because a lot of people, wonderful people, kept complaining that one needed to be put there.
Yeah.
Because it needed that recognition. It needed it to be told.
Yeah. Where do you think those spirits are now? Are they haunting whatever Henrington became?
No, I think a lot of them, I did a final walk, and that's what it was called, because I needed to, because when everybody came back that night, when we were doing the documentary, we all promised we would never go back there, that we saw what Henrington was, we understood it, and it was dangerous, and we would never go back. And we all had a very, very unique dream of the same lady with the crazy hair, and medicine thing at the entrance and told us that, you know, she couldn't protect us anymore and that we can be there, we can come back. So we made a pact that we'd never go back. Well, when I found out they were going to tear Henrington down, I told everybody, I said, I've got to go one more time. I have to. And the energy was so different when we got there. I fell at one point and twisted my ankle. We didn't think I was going to even get to finish the walk in. But it was like it was trying to keep me from coming. But we did. We made it in. We made it to the children's wing. That children's building, and we did I had several people prepared at a, you know, a certain time that we all were going to do an opening ceremony in a doorway, and we did a crossing over ceremony. We did that, and I told as many of them as I could, you know, as you can, go. You know, this is your opportunity. You need to go. You need to go cross over. And I'm hoping that we released a lot of what was there. Do I think that the land is still haunted? Very much so. I think that whatever was negative there is still there. Because I think it was bound to that building, bound to that property.
Right.
It didn't leave the property. It attacked one of the one girl that got attacked last night. The car that she got into,
It was rammed with something. I mean, you heard it on the recording. It was something rammed into it so hard that the car kind of swerved sideways, you know, kind of fishtailed, that they thought that maybe a deer had ran into the side of the car as they were leaving. And there was no dent or anything in the car, but something was trying to keep them there. And once they got off property, that was it. You know, it couldn't leave. So I think something's bound there. Which is scary.
That's hard. I think where there are places where trauma
into a campground.
I think when there's places where there is trauma. I said I think where there are places where there is trauma. I think negative energy kind of comes and gobbles up that trauma like Pac-Man.
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And especially when there's a lot of death that happens, you know, mass death. They're trying to collect souls. I mean, they're there trying to, you know, take those souls or make packs in the end.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of
mass
death, you know, there in it, Waverly.
Yes. If I seem distracted for a minute, excuse me, everybody. I was out, and I just came back home. I have a nine-month-old kitten who likes snuggles,
aww,
and he just kind of crossed in my arms and made me give him a snuggle, and I tried to put him down, and he just came back. So while Jenny and I are talking, going quietly hugging and kissing the cat.
Aww.
This man's a little healer. He's a magic little healer, this man, I got to tell you. It's funny because I always thought when Molly passed, I would die with her because we were so close. And then 6 months ago, 9 months ago, I got this little demon at 3 days old. So when Molly passed in November, it's like he helped heal me through it. It's interesting how spirit gives you that, right? Everything you need.
And
spirit
that
gives
is.
You everything you need. That's always the case.
Yeah. And I hated that when I found out that she, that just broke my heart because I know she was so much of who you are. I mean, she was huge connection with you, and it was so sad.
It's funny because
that our little fur babies, they are. And, you know, they say cats are spiritual anyway. They're very spiritual, very, you know, mythical creatures.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yes.
And right. I've got my little Kit Kat that she, if I start getting upset, she will lay on top of me. Or if David comes in to sit down and watch TV, she literally will get on top of me like I'm protecting you from anything. Nobody's coming near you. So she's my baby.
Yeah. And Molly was a Scorpio, and she was a lot like my mother. She helped me get through my mother's death, although I had her many, many years before that. But her personality and my mom's were very similar. So she had that Scorpio kind of standoffishness, you know? Like, my mom didn't really have that with me, but I think she had it with others where you picked her up if she wanted to be picked up, which was very not very often. And everything kind of had to be on her terms. She was a sweet cat. She loved me. Didn't really like anybody else but me, which made it hard for me.
Yeah,
it's hard not to have friends. I'm sorry?
Well, that's how Kit Kat used to be. Kit Kat was the same way. You didn't pet her unless she wanted to be petted. She really, you know, she might jump in your lap and say for, you know, a minute or two, but she just really was not, she wasn't one of those cats that really wanted to be around people. And then we ended up rescuing some other cats, and I don't know if she just, because she used to be, well, she wasn't scared of nothing. I don't know if it was because of age or because she felt encroached upon, but she started, you know, staying hid up in the top of the cabinet. So we brought her in the bedroom and, you know, keep the door shut. She stays in the bedroom. And she, with me, and you know, it got now, she, there are times I just have to let her go, can you give me a break? You know, because she always wants to be, she sleeps in my lap, literally, and wants to be, you know, petted and close to people. Whereas before, you know, She didn't want you to say. Now she's totally opposite.
This little guy's an Aries. His birthday's 2 days after me. He was born on Easter Sunday.
Aww.
And he's just like, personalities like mine. He's like the friendly guy. He's really mellow. He's chill. He's easygoing. He doesn't really have a temper. He's never, like, he lets the dogs chase him. He doesn't care. He thinks it's funny. Like, everything is funny, and maybe it's because I've had him since he was 3 days old, But he doesn't know any negativity. Like, he never cursed or anybody's mad at him. My girlfriend has an old Chihuahua Yorkie mix. And yeah, he's grumpy. Fine, and wants the princess, and he's grumpy. And Cullen wants to be his best friend, and Lego's having none of it. So Cullen will walk up to, slowly but surely, Cullen's not getting distracted, man. He is going to make friends with him. And slowly but surely, he's wearing him down. But when Lego sat with him, he doesn't get run away. He just kind of looks at him like, oh, why are you being like that? We're best friends, right? Like, it doesn't occur to him that everyone is not his best friend.
Oh, that's so sweet, man. Though.
Yeah,
that really is.
He's a sweet guy. He should be like a, like, I should take him to, like, nursing homes, and he should go hang out with people, because that's a, he would be great to just sit on, like, an elderly person's bed and snuggle with them.
Aw. Now, what kind of cat is he?
He's a blue, like Molly was.
Aw.
He's a blue. So here's the story. So we rescued these cats. My girlfriend and her daughter decided to foster cats for a rescue. And they told them they were giving them 4 orange tabbies. They go to pick up their basket of orange tabbies, and there's this little blue in there, half the size. They were 10 days old, and he was 3 days old. And they told them, look, we don't normally give them 4, but we have a problem. We got a call from a kill shelter, and they were going to euthanize him today. And he's only 3 days old.
Oh, my God.
And we went and took him. The rescue went and took him. They said, we went and took him. But the only way we could get him to stop crying was to put him in the basket with the tabbies. So only the tabbies. Yeah. So will you take him? So we took him, and he had a horrible respiratory infection. We didn't think he was going to make it. I mean, it was touch and go there for a while. I think he just loved to eat. That was part of it. He loved the milk in the bottle, and he just wanted to live. He just had a huge will to live. And sure enough, he did, and we were worried that he was going to be very small, or he was going to be sickly. He's healthy as a horse, and he's getting huge. He's 9 months old, and he's already 11 or 12, I think he's 12 pounds now. They say a pound a month. So he's probably going to be between 14 and 16 pounds. He's a big boy. And the most interesting thing has happened. He's a blue, you know, and blue is my girlfriend's favorite color, and my favorite color is purple. Over the last month or so, his belly has turned purple. So he's blue on the top, and he's purple on the bottom. So I call him Magic Purple Man. But he is so special. He has a total fan club, because I do live videos for Live Paranormal Video Channel three nights a week. And people, like, text me and ask for pictures of him. And, like, he has a huge fan club. Because his beautiful little loving, warm energy just comes out all over the screen, and people just love him.
Oh, that's
amazing.
He's
a natural. You know what I mean? Like, Molly was a wonderful healer. Like, she would give her input on readings with clients, and she was a wonderful healer for me. But this little guy, like, will heal the masses. And it's funny because my mom was the kind of healer Molly was. If you came to the house, she would heal you. But she wasn't going to be on TV or on the radio or anything. This little guy knows how to take that healing and give it to the world. And he's going to heal a lot of people in his long life, this guy.
That's amazing.
But right now,
he wants
a belly stretch. But every 3, 4, 5 times a day, he comes up and his little arms are outstretched. And that's when he wants a hug. And he crawls up in my arms. I don't have to pick him up even. He crawls up in my arms and puts his arms around my neck, and I hold his little bottom feet, and then he just kisses my whole face with his little kitty kisses.
That sounds like karma. That's how karma is. The karma that we rescued. He'll give you hugs, wrap his arms around your neck, and he kisses you, and he likes to sleep that way.
Nothing is more magic or spiritual than a cat. I tell you, I tell everybody who's sad, get a cat. There's so many that need homes, and a cat will heal you. And you'll overlook the fact that your leather phone case has a tooth mark in it, because they're so wonderful and so sweet. But there's a phone case get a tooth mark in it? Why is there a tooth mark in my phone?
Okay, cat, just come got my lap.
Sweetie, you're wonderful.
You're
so great to talk to you. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with my people. Where can you be found online?
PRRsociety.org and on Facebook under Jenny Stewart.
Keep the faith, my friend. Keep the positivity. The community is going to get better. Everything's going to be okay.
Thanks, you
just
too.
Keep the faith.
You
all
too,
right,
honey.
Sweetie? You take care. I love you so much. The wonderful Jenny Stewart, everybody. She is fantastic. What an honor to have her here and have her be part of the show again. If you miss me, I'm Sheena Metal. I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. I am also at LiveParanormal.com, HauntedPlayground.com. And that's our community forum for Haunted Playground. And if you are looking for me at night, I'm on Live Paranormal every Tuesday and Wednesday at 6 o'clock, every Friday at 4 o'clock, doing free psychic readings and having a blast. Please join me there. Till I see you next time, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, and always raise your vibration. I'll see y'all soon.